Thank you, Mr. Corlew. And good afternoon to everyone. It is great to be able to be back here in Canton and to share the Sabbath. It's always wonderful to be able to share Sabbath and be together. It's, I think, no matter the size, it's always the size of the congregation. It's just such a treat that God gives us, as we talked about family and the love in the first message. And especially coming back from the feast, you need to have family after you come back from the feast, because we just went through all of God's plan through his holy days. And we start at the beginning, we march from Passover, we go through, and there's introspection, and we go through all of this, and sometimes you can kind of get and the wind gets out of your sails a little bit. Maybe it's just me, but you know, after the feast, there can be times where you're trying to find your way. And as Christians, that is one of the time is one of the difficult things. When you have a long time where you're waiting, my Lord seems slack concerning his promises, things like that run through our minds. But having gone through all of the feast days now, having gone through really the plan of God, there are many years of experience here I see in the room. When do you think Jesus Christ is going to return? If you have an idea, like, is it like 5 years? Within 5 years? I had to go five because we know we're at least 3.5 out, right? So 5 years? 10 years? Nobody's willing to be brave yet.
One day sooner than
that's right, one day closer than yesterday. Every day we march closer. Yeah. You know, it's interesting because when you don't put people on the spot from the lectern and you actually have these conversations with people, it's interesting because what you might find is that it varies depending on age. Younger people tend to think, it's way out there. It's going to be a long time. I'm going to be able to go through college. I'm going to be able to get married, have kids, all these things. It's just somewhere out there, right near when I'm going to pay off student loans. You know, it's way out there in the future. But when you talk to individuals who are older, the urgency and oftentimes zeal is very different. And so when we have a church family, we have people of varying ages, varying experience with God's truth, you can have a wide gamut of what individuals think as far as when Christ is going to come back. Let's go to Mark chapter 13, verse 32. See, as we are sitting here at the end, the Sabbath after the last great day, that eighth day, marking, symbolizing the culmination of God's plan as he has shared it with us currently, because I doubt that it's just going to end there, because God seems to have everything figured out. Not seems to, he does. But he's only shared with us what we need to know. And you can see that because there are times that he told John to shut things up and not share it. There are times that he told Daniel not to write things out. You know, we know that God keeps the blinders on as long as they need to be on for people to have the opportunities that they need. But here in Mark chapter 13, verse 32, it says, "But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels in heaven, nor the Son, but only the Father." So it is so, I mean, this is Fort Knox. The secret is kept. Not even the Son, not even Jesus Christ knows. It's when his Father says it's time to go, he says, all right, we're going. Kind of like Abraham. Abraham, pack up your things, you know, go. And he says, okay, I'll go. Noah, here I am. You know, so these individuals respond. And when God tells his Son, when he tells Jesus Christ to return, he's going to return. He's going to come back. But many people will look at things in life, over the span of their life. Our human tendency is to kind of try to, shall we say, pace ourselves. How are we going to make it from, you know, the end of the feast to Passover? How are we going to make it from the time that I am baptized until the time Christ returns? How am I going to make it through all of those ups and downs? And so we try to pace ourselves, but we kind of try to, okay, so how long could it be until he comes back, because I want to be able to have the right amount of zeal, the right amount of energy, but we're told here it's absolutely uncertain, and we don't know when it is. And that makes planning a little bit difficult. If you've ever had a vague, nebulous timeline, and you're like, okay, now make plans, and you're like, And you consider the individuals who are giving the talents or the minas. They're just like, do business until I return. Well, how long are you going to be gone? Should I wait until the very end to do something? What are we going to do? But it's intriguing here. If we go on in verse 33, not only does no man know the day or the hour, only the Father, but it says after that, you know, you want to know when this is going to happen. We want to know. It helps us to plan. It helps us to figure things out, right? Humanly speaking, we want to know these things. But Christ then takes it and he kind of redirects. So often we'll see his disciples, we'll see the Pharisees ask a question, and what does he do? He pivots and he redirects and he tries to point them maybe in a more fruitful direction. And so he says here in verse 33, he says, take heed, watch and pray, for you do not know when the time is. Stop trying to figure it out, almost. It is like a man going to a far country who left his house and gave authority to his servants and to each his work and commanded the doorkeeper to watch. Watch, therefore, for you do not know when the master of the house is coming, in the evening, at midnight, at the crowing of the rooster, or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping. And what shall I say to you? I say to all, watch. You know, you look at the times that he's specifying here. Is he going to come in the evening, at midnight, early in the morning, when the rooster's crowing, or when the sun is just peeking over the edge? If you've ever had chickens and roosters, they don't wait till the sun comes up. It's just when it starts to get light in the sky. You can't even see the sun rays coming up, and they start crowing, and they're like, I want to be the first one to make the most noise, because then everybody knows that it's me. But it's early in the morning. And then later on, you know, and it says, or in the morning. But these are all times that generally, I like a little shut-eye, right? I want to be able to be sleeping at those times. In the evening, I want to be able to recuperate. But Jesus gives the instruction. He says to watch, to pray, and to do, in verse 34, to each his work. He gave the work to do. He commanded them something to do, and he expects them to do that, above all, to watch. As with the first message, I actually have a resource here going back to the good news before it was Beyond Today, but this is from the January-February 2011. There's an article titled, Jesus' Warning to Watch. Just what did he mean? Here's an excerpt. It says, when the New Testament commands us to watch, it is usually the translation of one of two Greek words, gregoreo or agrupneo, which have similar meanings, to stay awake, to be sleepless. They are usually meant in the metaphorical and spiritual sense, to be vigilant and on guard, fully awake, aware, alert, and intently focused, with several applications and implications. Let's turn over to Matthew 26. We'll look at one of these examples. Matthew chapter 26. Familiar passage at the time of Passover that we are now on the march towards. Matthew chapter 26, verse 37. And Jesus took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee, James and John, and he began to be sorrowful and deeply distressed, and he said to them, my soul is exceedingly sorrowful, even to death. Stay here and watch with me. Stay here and be awake, and be alert, be intently focused. Now, he was meaning this, in this case, primarily physically. Be up with me. When we're going through a tough time in life, when we're looking at the long haul, it's nice to have support, physical support. Our church family that we have here, our friends across the world. It's nice, as we heard again in the first message, to be able to have those connections that tie us all together as not only a physical family, but the spiritual family that God is building. So this is primarily physical here. And Jesus was chiding his disciples, as we go on, for not remaining awake during the hour preceding his arrest. Let's go on. Verse 39, it says, he went a little farther and fell on his face and prayed, saying, oh, my Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Nevertheless, not as I will, but as you will. And he came to the disciples and found them sleeping and said to Peter, what, could you not watch with me 1 hour? Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. So that watch, he's like, you couldn't stay up. You couldn't physically be there for me. But in the next verse, we started to read there, Jesus, quoting again from the Good News article, says, what Jesus next said to Peter has a deeper spiritual meaning. Watch and pray, lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing. There are good intentions. But the flesh, our mere human willpower, is weak. That's Matthew 26, verse 41. It is spiritual watching coupled with prayer that gives one the strength to survive temptations and difficult situations. And I've said before, there are a few more difficult situations, really, than just time. Having to do the same thing over and over while waiting for an indeterminate end. When is Christ going to come back? 5, 10, 15, 20 years? That indeterminate end? That's a difficult situation. So how can we follow Jesus' instructions to watch, pray, and work? That's back in Mark 13, 33 through 34. We read that there at the beginning. How can we follow his instructions to watch, pray, and work? Especially here as, again, we've concluded the full roster of the feast days for this past year. And we're moving on to the next round. Well, the first thing, it's nice to actually go and see what we're supposed to do. We alluded to, we covered a little bit about that word watch, in the Greek word. But again, watch, gregoreo, means to be vigilant, awake, to give strict attention. This is not just having a cursory eye. I looked at it. I saw it a little bit. I may have glanced at it. No, this is to give strict attention. In addition to that, it means to be cautious. If we are being vigilant and we're watching, if we're staying awake at a time when usually we want to be asleep and resting, if we're giving attention to things that really, you know, it's a long time. I can't remember all the things that I need to remember over this. It makes sense if I would forget some of the things I'm supposed to do. It's such a long period of time. And so we can allow ourselves to be like, oh, that's okay. I can forget that. I can fudge on that. I've got time to make it back up. I know we've got a few people who are, I'm very happy that I no longer have to do schoolwork during the feast. But you know, there are times you're like, oh, I have to catch up. How long do I have before I have to get all these things turned in? And sometimes work and projects, farming, whatever it is, all that catch-up stuff. We try to sit there and figure out, okay, what do I have to do now? What can I wait for? But if we're watching, we're being vigilant, we're giving strict attention, we're being cautious. Let's go to 1 Thessalonians 5. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. This is another instance where we see the word gregoreo. 1 Thessalonians chapter 5. Starting in verse 1. It says, concerning the times and the seasons, brethren, you have no need that I should write to you. We know when the feast days are. You might have your little calendar book. You might put them into and write them onto your yearly planner. You might have it set in your phone so it reminds you when sunset is. But we know these things. We look forward to them. We mark them down because they're important to us. You should have no need that I should write you. For you yourselves know perfectly that the day of the Lord so comes as a thief in the night. Now the interesting thing is, while it's still a thief in the night, it says every eye will see him. So that's at a time that we may not want it to happen or may not be expecting it, but still everyone is going to see him. And if we're going to catch it and see it at the time that we should be there and ready for it, then we need to be watching. It comes as a thief in the night, for when they say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes upon them as labor pains upon a pregnant woman, and they shall not escape. But you, brethren, are not in darkness. We're not in darkness. See, this is an interesting thing. People are like, well, when's he going to come back? What do I need to know? And so people will just pour themselves into trying to figure out when it is. You have all of these seers. You can go and Nostradamus, all the people who are predicting when the 9/11 attacks happened. Everybody was talking about this. Was alas, alas, Babylon has fallen. And we have all these people reading into prophecy. And they're looking and they're trying to figure it out because they want to know, when is this going to happen? And we saw an uptick of people coming to church services because now, I mean, this is real because it's going to happen. And so now I know that I actually have to do something. But God doesn't want us to be in that way fair weather Christians. He wants us to be willing to watch throughout, regardless of the indeterminate time frame. It says, you, brethren, are not in darkness, so that this day should overtake you as a thief. This is a huge difference between God's people, who he has revealed things to through the prophets. There's nothing he has revealed except through, you know, but through the prophets. He reveals his word through his people to let people know. This is not something that we should be like, oh, I didn't realize it was coming. How did I know? Because if we're following him and we're looking at the times and the seasons, it should be pretty apparent to us. When we start seeing some of those things happen, when you get into prophecy and you're looking at some of those things that are occurring, we should have a pretty good idea. Like, oh, yeah, okay, I see the woes, I see the bowls, I see some of these things happening, and it's really starting to move on. Verse 5, you are sons of light and sons of the day. We are not of the night nor of the darkness. Therefore, let us not sleep as others do at the time when we want to sleep, in the evening, at midnight, when the rooster crows, or in the morning, all those times that everybody else wants to be asleep and be relaxing and rejuvenating. He says, do not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. Let us, gregoreo, let us watch, be vigilant, attention to detail. Sometimes we can get so caught up, I won't say, people can just look for the easiest path. We tend to do that. Like water, we want to follow the path of least resistance. And so maybe you can reduce Christianity down to only love but not obedience. Right? But we see in Romans 10, you need to have zeal with knowledge. The details do matter. They matter to God. Just like as a parent or a grandparent or a boss, if you ask somebody to do something and you give them specific instructions and they do something else, you're like, why did you do that? I gave you very specific instructions. Here is how we do that. This is the process. If you don't follow the process, like in manufacturing, you can blow up a multiple $100,000 machine. If you don't follow the process, it can really put, quite literally, a wrench in the works. God says, here's what I want you to do. Here's how I want you to do it. Go out and do this. And we can say, well, I think he really means X, Y, Z. Whatever's comfortable, whatever's nicer, whatever makes the long haul, difficult situation easier. But watching means we have a strict attention to be vigilant, awake, and to be cautious. There are many, many scriptures, and you look at watchmen and what they're supposed to do and how important it was for them to watch. What it meant if they fell asleep on the watch. We're told to watch. Let's go to Luke chapter 12. Luke chapter 12. This is another instance of gregoreo. Luke chapter 12, verse 54. Again, if you're seeing a common theme in the scriptures we're looking at, we're talking about discerning the time here. He says, in verse 54, he also said to the multitudes, whenever you see a cloud rising out of the west, immediately you say, a shower is coming. I know how to be a meteorologist, right? I saw dark foreboding clouds on the highways I was driving in. I was like, that looks kind of nasty. Looks like there's going to be pretty good rain. And guess what? We drove right into it. Like, wow, you figured that one out. Christ is saying, you know, a shower is coming, and so it is. And when you see the south wind blow, you say, there will be hot weather. And there is. Hypocrites, you can discern the face of the sky and of the earth, but how is it that you do not discern this time? How is it that you're not able to actually watch and figure out what's going on? You look, and you say, this is happening, but yet we don't follow it up with a therefore, what manner of person ought we to be in holiness, godly conduct? Because that should always be the next question. We see things happening, therefore, what should we be doing? Watching. We should be watching. 1 Peter 5:8. 1 Peter 5, verse 8. It says, be sober. Be vigilant. Watch, gregoreo. Be sober, be vigilant. Because your adversary, the devil, walks about like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. How many people, you're out on safari, we're like, ah, there's the lion over there. I don't have to worry. One feast we went down to Puerto Vallarta, and they had a zoo enclosure for their lion. But it was not like most Western zoos or enclosures, because it only had chain link fence set at different intervals. And so you could actually, if you had a small enough hand, reach in there. A lion's mane is quite scruffy, but he gets faster the more people touch his mane. Just a point of note for you to, you know, set aside there. But you know what? You start watching. You're like, how fast is he going to react? Should I do this not wise thing, right? When we're around danger, of course we should pay attention. Satan is walking about like a roaring lion, and I can't see him, and you can't see him. We can see the works of his agents. But we'd be like, well, I don't see any danger here. I mean, I've got a long time. I've got 5 years. I've got 10 years. I've got my entire life. Who knows? So I can catch back up. But that's not what we're supposed to do, what we are supposed to do. We're supposed to be sober, vigilant, watchful. The second part of what Jesus Christ gave as instruction there in Matthew 13, 33 and 34, he said, pray. To watch and also to pray. Now there are two words, again, like kind of like gregoreo and groupneo. For watching, there are two words that are often used for pray in the New Testament. One of those is prosyuchomai. You can spell it a ch. Prosyuchomai, which means to supplicate, to pray earnestly for something. You think about supplication, somebody who is coming before someone else, and to really, really ask for something in earnest. The second word is deomai. Deomai, which means to beg, to beseech, or to pray. Now that kind of takes it up a notch, because you're like, well, you can ask a lot and you can be incessant. Maybe we can be the persistent widow, right? We're asking a lot. But you also then consider the example of the woman who asked for her child to be healed, and Christ said, you know, should I give food to the dogs, and she said, even the dogs need scraps. She was begging him. She wanted it so badly. She was begging. Do we, as we look in our lives and the difficult times that we may encounter, as we're trying to persevere and to endure and to remain until the end, as we're striving to help others, do we really actually pray with that same amount of visceral connection with our Father? You read through Psalms, and there are times that I'll read Psalms and I say, like, who talks like that? It's very passionate, but I'm like, do I talk like that to my dad? Do I talk to God like that? So just vested in there in what the conversation is and what needs to happen, that I'm like not only being earnest about it, but really, really begging him for it. Let's go to Luke 21. Luke 21. We'll go and start in verse 34. Luke 21, verse 34. It says, take heed to yourselves, lest your hearts be weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and the cares of this life, and the day come upon you unexpectedly. We already read that that shouldn't happen because we are not so unaware. We should be able to discern the seasons. We should know these things. It shouldn't come on us unexpectedly. But you know what? If our hearts are weighed down with carousing, drunkenness, and the cares of this life, it can come on us unexpectedly. Because we were focusing somewhere else. We were not giving vigilance, strict attention to the detail. We were not being cautious, right? This goes right back to the concept of watch that we just covered. But it says, for it will come as a snare on all those who dwell on the face of the whole earth. Watch, therefore, and pray always that you may be counted worthy to escape all these things that will come to pass and stand before the Son of Man. What are we praying about? That we're going to escape all these things. You want to go and read about what these things are? Go to Daniel. Go to Revelation. What are all these things? It's the day of the Lord. It's all these things that are just going to bring destruction and pain on the earth so that hopefully mankind will actually grasp that God is right. But how hard would you pray for your life? Would we beg? Would we really earnestly go to someone in supplication? Is there a way that we can, you know, do something else? Is there another workaround? Do I have to die? That gets, we haven't been put in that position. At least I haven't. Maybe some of you who have served in the armed forces have. But there are many in previous generations who have had those exact things, not even being a soldier, have had those exact things forced upon them. How real does it get when you recognize that it is our life for which we pray? It's our life for which we beg, that we can be worthy, counted worthy to escape all those things that will come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. If we're watching, we really truly do see the need for Christ's return. Wildfires, floods, hurricanes, I mean, all of these things that go on, those are just natural things, right? And then you have terrorism. And now we have people on such polar ends of the spectrum that are unwilling to speak to one another. And so we have hatred going on and broiling up between individuals. And that is not God's way. That's not what he wants for his kids. And if you had a knockdown, haul-out brawl between two kids as a parent, that's not what you want your kids to do. And yet that's what we're doing here on earth. In so many ways, people are doing that. We need to be praying fervently, earnestly, begging God that we could be counted worthy to escape. Matthew chapter 6. Matthew chapter 6. Verse 10. This is in the middle of the model prayer. Starts in verse 9, but it says, "Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name." Verse 10, "Your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven." What are we supposed to be praying for? His kingdom to come. And that's what we just looked forward to, symbolized through the feast on the eighth day. We want his will to be done. Right now, it's the will of Satan and the will of human beings that primarily is what's getting done here on earth. And we need to be asking and watching and praying that our minds are more in tune with him, that we understand the urgency of our calling so that we can actually be taking on his mind, so that when we seek our will, it is actually his will. You know, that's a unity that Christ spoke of in John 17. I and my Father are one. In other areas, he said, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. Because they had that unity of mind and unity of thought. And if we are praying for that, that we not only escape the day and the troubles that are going to come, you know, we need to be having his mind. We need to be having that thought process, praying for this very thing, that his kingdom come, his will be done on earth as it is in heaven. 1 Thessalonians 5, we were there a little bit earlier, but we're going to go farther back in the chapter to verse 17. 1 Thessalonians 5. Verse 17. Let's start in verse 16. It says, "Rejoice always. Pray without ceasing. Continue to do that. In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you." If we're rejoicing always, if we're praying without ceasing, what happens? We're not going to quench the Spirit, as it says in verse 19. We're not going to despise those prophecies that tell us, when is this going to happen? We should know. We should be able to discern. We should be able to see the clouds and know that rain is coming. "Test all things. Hold fast what is good. Abstain from every form of evil." It's through prayer and study that we understand what to watch for. "Pray without ceasing. In everything give thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus for you. Do not quench the Spirit. Do not despise prophecies." Those things instruct us. They tell us what to watch for. They tell us what details we need to know to give attention to those, strict attention to those. So we need to watch. We need to pray. Third thing, back in Mark 13, if you go back there, this is Mark 13, verse 34. Mark 13, verse 34, says, it is like a man going to a far country who left his house and gave authority to his servants. So he gives authority, and we saw that he did that with his disciples. He says, I give you all authority over these things. Go out, preach the gospel. To each his work, he has given to each his work. And just like in family, there are chores for taking out the trash. There are chores for watering and feeding the dog. There are chores for cleaning the car. There are chores for doing laundry. We have different things that we're called to do. But he's given to each his work and commanded the doorkeeper to watch. He has given us work. And that word work in Greek is ergon. Ergon. E-R-G-O-N, if you wanted to write it. But it means to work, to toil as an effort or occupation. I think it's interesting that the definition is there, not just, okay, you work, but it's you toil as an effort or occupation. When he told Adam that he was going to toil and he was going to grow, and it was by the sweat of his brow that he was going to grow things, it's hard work. You can have a job as a kid, and it's nice because you get extra money, right? You teen, young adults, you're still at home. I remember that. It's glorious. I look back at that time, and I'm like, what did I do with all that money? It could go, it just, you know, it goes away. The second you get something you have to pay for, you need to pay rent, you need to pay your car payment, you need to do, you know, any of those other things. All of a sudden, maybe you go to the restaurant, you're like, that drink just cost me a solid hours of work. Is that worth it? Right? Work takes on a new meaning because now we're looking at the value of things. What is the value of time and what is how much do I want to put towards this? Do I really enjoy that enough to forego this? Work and toil as an effort or occupation, it's not just a flippant job or an easy task to go complete. It is something that we focus upon, going back to watch, to give strict attention to be diligent about it, to be vigilant. You know, if we had a job, especially back at the time of the recession, right, in 2007, 2008, you had the financial crisis, those who went through the 80s with massive inflation and high interest rates and all the other stuff, you do pretty much whatever you can to keep your job because you know that if you lose it, it's going to take so much more work and effort to get another one. How diligent are we when we're like, I don't want to lose this? That concept of the bird in the hand and two in the bush. We want to keep and maintain what we have. There's an importance to maintaining our occupation. It's important to note here in Mark 13:34 that the master went away, and he left us with our own respective tasks. He says, do this. In other areas, you can look and say, you know, we do this until his coming. Trade. Take these minas, take these talents, do work until I return. And it's an indeterminate amount of time, but it's a very specific job that is given. We need to work. Let's go to Matthew chapter 23. Start in verse 1, Matthew 23, verse 1. Jesus spoke to the multitudes and to his disciples, saying, the scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do, but do not do according to their works. For they say and do not do. See, they had works, but they were incomplete. For they bind heavy burdens hard to bear and lay them on men's shoulders, but they themselves will not move them with one of their fingers. Oh, I can't be burdened to do that. I'm not willing to toil, but you need the toil. Well, that's exactly what Christ said about the Gentile leaders. He says they lord it over one another. And that's what the Pharisees were doing. But all their works, verse 5, they do to be seen by men. They make their phylacteries broad and enlarge the borders of their garments. They love the best places at feasts and the best seats in the synagogues. They want to be seen. They want to toss that money into the pot and say, oh, thank you, God, I fast twice a week. Unlike this tax collector over here, this publican, right? That's they want to be seen. They want greetings in the marketplace and to be called by men, rabbi, teacher, teacher, you, respected individuals. They wanted that. But you, do not be called rabbi. Don't seek that out. For one is your teacher, the Christ. He's our leader. He is the one who makes manifest the truth of God for us through his word, through the spirit that we have as a result of his sacrifice. We have access to that because of him. We are all brethren. Do not call anyone on earth your father, for one is your father, he who is in heaven. Do not be called teachers, for one is your teacher, the Christ. But he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. And whoever exalts himself will be humbled, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. He took that concept of work and how the Pharisees were doing it, and again, as he did with many things, flipped it on its head. He says, you think that having the position and the recognition, the accolades, the respect, you're working in this position. Ooh, you know, good for you. You're being seen by men. He says, what is real work is where you're willing to actually toil, serve one another. There is greatness in serving. There is greatness in toil and work. Let's go to James chapter 2. These three concepts of watching, praying, and working, just they go together because you can't have one without the other. And I hope we're seeing this as we're going through these scriptures because we not only see watching coming up multiple times, but we see praying coming up multiple times. And here in the work, as we're trying to figure out what we're supposed to do, where did I say? We're in James 2. I should actually get there. James chapter 2, verse 14. It says, what does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? I have faith. I believe it's going to happen. I believe that God is so loving and so kind that I don't actually even have to do anything. He's so gracious and just to forgive. But you know, what does God say? He has faith but does not have works. Can faith save him? You can have all the faith in the world, but if you're unwilling to manifest that by doing, watching, praying, and working all in conjunction, you know, watching means we have to have understanding. It means we have to have that attention to the detail. To pray about frivolous things that don't have a focus for the kingdom is just short-sighted. Moving on in verse 15. It says, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, depart in peace, be warm and filled, God will provide, right? But you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also, faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works, show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. Because faith is trust. We really don't talk about faith much in our modern vernacular. It's just, you know, off there in the corner for religious people and all the zealots. But we'll talk about trust. Everyone wants trust in a relationship. Everybody wants trust with those whom they love, their friends. And we'll see falling aways of individuals and their relationships just diminish and go down to nothing because I just can't trust them anymore. Well, God says, here's the task that I want you to do. Go and do this work. Here's how I want you to do it. And we might say, well, I don't want to do that work. That's not what I signed up for. That's too hard. I don't think I can do it. And we, in doing that, diminish his role and his ability in our lives. We say, we're in essence saying, God, I don't actually think you're strong enough or magnificent enough to lift me up where I need to be lifted up, to do these things and to accomplish this stuff. It requires us to step out in that trusting relationship, to do the works, because it shows in our heart that we're trusting him. He says, do this. We say, why? He says, do this. We say, okay, I might not know why yet, but I'm going to go do this. I trust your will because I want your will to be done on earth as it is in heaven. I want your kingdom to come. I have faith in what you have told me. So therefore, I'm going to do what you tell me because I trust you. I mean, there's just so much interplay here, and it just weaves together. Verse 17. Thus also, faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But someone will say, you have faith, and I have works. Show me your faith without your works, and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that there is one God. You do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. But do you want to know, O foolish man, that faith without works, without toil, without that effort, like an occupation, faith without that work is dead. It has to have substance to back it up. Zeal without knowledge is useless. You can have an excited person go run right off a cliff. Woo! I didn't know there was a cliff there. Well, you should have read the sign, right? It was 50 meters back. It needs to be focused. It needs to be directed. And God gives us that direction. He gives us that focus. He says, here's what you watch for. Here's what you pray for. Here's the work I want you to do. Now go do it. John 13. John chapter 13. Verse 12. John 13, verse 12. Here, the end of the Passover meal. When he had washed their feet, taken his garments, and sat down again, he said to them, do you know what I've done to you? You call me teacher and Lord. And we just read earlier, you only have one teacher. We only have one Lord. We only have one rabbi. We only have one God. It says, you call me teacher and Lord, and you say, well, for so I am. If I, then, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. Here is what I want you to do. For I have given you an example that you should do as I have done to you. Most assuredly, I say to you, a servant is not greater than his master, nor is he who sent greater than he who sent him. If you know these things, blessed are you, blessed are we, if we do them. We have to do these things. Christ gave us work to do. He gave us a focus. He gives us direction for what to pray about. He gives us things that we should watch for that can let us know, even if we don't know the exact day or hour, but we can know and have a surety in our lives that we're doing what we need to do. We know Jesus is going to return. We just don't know when. Isn't that the rub? At the most, it's a lifetime. And there are many who have been doing this already for a lifetime. 70 years, by reason of strength, you get 80, 90. There are many who have been doing this and walking and following God for an entire life. But what is 90 years in the scheme of things? What is 90 years out of 1,000? What is 90 years out of eternity? It's but a drop in the bucket. Can we watch and stay focused enough for that lifetime? And at the shortest, a bit over 3.5 years, right? At the shortest timeline, it's that. But no matter what the timing is, we need to be doing what we've been commissioned to do. Because that's really what it boils down to. Does it matter when he's coming back? No. Because he told us to do something and to keep doing it until he returns. Does it matter if we know when he's going to come back? Does it matter if we see prophecy being fulfilled? Does it matter if other people around us fall away and lose sight? Does it matter if the individual who baptized us is no longer a faithful servant of God? Does it matter? The answer to all of those is no. It doesn't matter a lick. What matters for each and every one of us that needs to be driven home is that we need to be doing what he gave us to do. Everything else is secondary, tertiary, moves down the line. Let's go back to Mark 13 in closing here. It's so important for us to remember what we need to do. This is not saying that we earn salvation through our works. This is not saying that we can pray our way into the family of God. This is not saying that if we watch and we know enough, we're going to get it. And we're going to have the exact thing that we need to know. We're going to have that special knowledge. We're going to know his name. We're going to know his calendar. We're going to know whatever the special thing is. And if we know those things and we're watching for those things, then boom, in we go. When you look at the context of what he's talking about here in Mark 13, it's right on the heels of that parable of the fig tree where he looked. He says, verse 28, he says, "Now learn this parable from the fig tree. When its branch has already become tender and puts forth leaves, you know that summer is near. So you also, when you see these things happening, know that it is near the doors. Assuredly, I say to you, this generation will by no means pass away till all these things take place. Heaven and earth will pass away, but my words will by no means pass away." There's a consistency in what we should watch for, what we should pray for, and what we should work towards. Verse 32, "But of that day and hour no one knows, not even the angels in heaven nor the Son, but only the Father. So stop asking me, just do what I told you to do." If you can't hear a parent saying that to you, or a teacher or a boss, just stop talking. Stop thinking you need to know all these things. Do what I gave you to do. It really is a call to action. Take heed, watch, and pray, for you do not know when the time is. It's like a man going to a far country who left his house and gave authority to his servants, and to each his work, and commanded the doorkeeper to watch. "Watch therefore, for you do not know when the master of the house is coming, in the evening, at midnight, at the crowing of the rooster, or in the morning, lest coming suddenly he find you sleeping. And what I say to you, I say to all, watch." We need to be vigilant. We need to have strict attention given. We need to be awake, to be cautious, to pray earnestly, begging for his will to be done in our life, his kingdom to be brought here to earth, and to work towards making that our goal, towards building the character that he has called us to do. So make sure that we're watching, praying, and working.